I'm Annie. I'm an alcoholic. I live in Ireland, and I'm really grateful to be in recovery. And I have to say, it's not my favorite thing to be doing. And basically, I'm just going to talk like me today, 16th of May, 2022, I had to check. And whatever I say is just how I feel today. And it'll be like just saying whatever comes to me with an allusion to the 12th step, which is having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And I was like thinking just before the meeting, I'm going to say the S word, you know, the spiritual word. So I was like, okay, what does that mean? What does that mean? So I'm going to use this, right? A new state of consciousness and being. That came out of the 12 and 12. So a new state of consciousness and being. So that'll do me anyway for the 16th of May. And like I say, it's just how I feel at the moment. Like the 12th step is one of those that is quite long, and anywhere I read it, it seems to be quite long. And I remember I had a sponsor one time that used to make you read the steps in the bath. I think it was so you couldn't run away, like that you had to, like you were sort of like captive audience or something. So all the you had to read all the steps in the bath, not all the same day, like one at a time. And then the joke was supposed to be that the 12th step was 2.5 baths. And I always remembered that. In fact, I would say it's a good 3 baths there. It's long. And it's like parts, you know. Now some of the other ones, the other versions I noticed just concentrate on the service aspect. But I don't know, I sort of like it having all of that in it, you know, because I suppose to me it's like a tidying up of all the stuff that went ahead of it. And they say, like, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, not even a result, but the result. So basically that is the implication, is that this is this new state of consciousness and being is sort of like the aim of the steps or something, do you know? And I guess, like, I needed that, because, you know, when I came in, they were very emphasizing on this, the person I was would drink again. And you didn't have much trouble convincing me of that, because I knew the person I was would drink again, because the person I was had to drink, and the person I was convinced was definitely going to be drinking again. Or it wasn't so much that, I don't know if I was choosing to drink, but I was feeling I would have to. I sort of felt I'd have to drink. I did not realize about the program. I didn't realize it was, you know, a program of change. I didn't realize there was anything in this AA thing that was going to help me. I just thought these people were all simple alcoholics and did nothing wrong with them but drinking. And I had all these other things going on. Which was actually true, but I could not see how stopping drinking was going to make any difference to me, because I had a lot of pain, a lot of damage, a lot of SH1T going on. So the result of these steps, like, so I did what they suggested. I was very teachable. I was very, I don't know if obedient is the right word, as teachable. And I would do what I was told. I would do what was suggested. I think I had that gift of desperation I've heard people talk about. So I'm not saying like the new state of consciousness and being is the be all and end all or anything, but I will say that over time, I would have a continuing sense of an improvement of consciousness and being. I never got to a place, in fact, it took me a long time to realize I was never going to get to a place of having it together. I don't know what the it is. I'm not really sure what the together is, but after quite a long time sober, I realized I was never going to get it together and that this was going to be a work in progress forever. And I was never going to be happy with it. And I was never going to be the person I wanted to be. And as lately as last week, somebody died. I've had a lot of people die in my life this year. And this one more person, I was at her funeral on Friday. And this person was, she wasn't in the fellowship. And she just was so, I don't know, I won't say perfect because nobody's perfect, but she would be what I would have aspired to be. And I had that real realization after she died, that like if I lived 10, 20, 100 lifetimes, I could not be like her. That was like huge when I realized that, that it wouldn't matter how hard, how many times, I would never be her. So I'm still trying to actually knit that one. So anyway, my state of consciousness and being is ongoing. So the next bit is we tried to carry this message to alcoholics. Now, that, as far as I'm concerned, and I think as far as AA is concerned, that can mean lots of things. You know, initially, I thought it meant dragging people in off bar stools, like really pulling the guys in and getting them sober. But this is what I saw around me, because this was sort of like a thing at the time. I realized I couldn't do that. I just wasn't going to be able to be going out. And there was these like really serious 12-step calls going on. You went to people's houses and, you know, and I'm not saying I didn't do any of those, but I didn't do very many. But I did realize that I could be a good secretary and I could make a room welcoming and clean and set it up nice. And this is where I put all my energy in my first year, like when I was my first secretaryship and everything. And I got a real humdinger one because it was in a condemned building and you had to wash the dishes before and after the meeting because of the mice. But anyway, it's another story. So I realized that my 12-step work was going to be of a more administrative type. And I threw myself into that, you know, and totally set about having good meetings and, you know, doing stuff like that, or just being available. Now, I did take the being available thing way too far, because they also told me you never say no in AA, and that's not true, but I didn't know that. So I didn't say no. And I was out, you know, morning, noon and night, like, you know, doing whatever it was they asked me to do. And I neglected my kids over it, and my kids were getting in the window, like, you know, after school, which is just mad. It took me a long time to, well, long time, I don't know, it was years, but it was a short number of years to realize that this was not okay. And I realized that my service could be my, you know, my availability and my willingness was as far as, you know, that I had no reason to say no. You know, if I had a good reason to say no, that was okay. And if it was an excuse, then that wasn't okay. And this is how I labeled it after that. And like a good reason could be my family. My good reason could be because I needed to have a meal with my kids that wasn't being interrupted by the telephone. Because back then the telephone was in the hall and you had to go out and stand in the hall and your kids were inside waiting for their dinner for 2 hours. Like there was so much of that. But then I began to see, and it did take, this, you know, you must think this woman's slow, but yeah, I was very slow. I'm very slow. It took me a long time to work all of this out. So that's what I still live on that one. If I don't have a good reason to, you know, I'll say yes. If I have a good reason to say no, I'll say no. And I always run that one in my head. Whether I want to do it or not, it's not the question. The other thing, and I think this is important, my early days, my earlier days sponsoring people, everyone drank. All my sponsees drank. And I felt really bad about that. And people pointed out to me that I didn't drink. And then I began to see that, sure, this is for me. Like I'm doing this for myself. You know, like anything I do is for me. It's not for the other person. Like if they get something out of it, I can only do my best with that. I did stop sponsoring for quite a long time because I just felt I was so miserable at it. But I don't think really I help anyone. I think I can give a commitment of time to somebody. And if the person wants to avail of that commitment of time, I can only share whatever I have with someone. I can't share, you know, the secret of life or whatever. I've no secrets. Like, in fact, the only secret I have in AA for sobriety is, I think if there is one, it's service. I do feel that, like, just doing service does me an awful lot of good. And that, you know, like it's not like that I'm doing anyone any favors. You know, I'm not doing anyone any favors at all, ever. And I never do anything, like it's not to get anything back for it. I just do it. It's no hooks. Just do it if I choose to do it. And there's no hooks, and there's no, I don't expect anything for it. And when I came in first, you know, from the very first day I ever came into AA, there was people there. And the lights were on. The place was warm. There was chairs. Somebody had to open that room, turn those lights on, and put those chairs out, you know. And it wasn't me because I was only arriving. And I have since put the lights on, put the chairs out, and other people have come in and gotten sober on those chairs. And when I was sober in the early days, they said to me, this is not just for you. It's not just for us. This is for the people who are yet to come, like people not born yet who are going to need this. And then I began to see those people coming. I still get emotional when I think about this. I began to see the people coming into AA that weren't born when I was starting out. Like, and I was there. I was able to have the lights on and the seats out and the place warm for them to come into. And I cannot even begin to tell you how that makes me feel. I'm getting emotional just thinking about that, because that is the truth of what we do. It's the truth of what I've been doing, you know, all these years. And that service and that's the middle of the 12th step. And then the third part of the 12th step is practice these principles in all our affairs. That's a huge one, I think. I think that's everything. I tend to, like, the voice in my head calls it sober behavior, but that's like a big blanket sort of, you know, description for me that I make for myself. Like, I'd be going, like, to myself, go, like, you know, hey, Annie, is that sober behavior? Or, hey, Annie, that's not sober behavior, you know. I just use that expression myself as shorthand for practicing these principles in all my affairs. It's really not, I don't really feel a sense of, I don't know, it sounds really weird when I say this, I don't really feel it's right or wrong, or is this right, or is somebody telling me it's right, or is it in the commandments? It's just, after a while, I just got to a point where something either sat right with me or it didn't sit right with me. Just it's a feeling of how my shoulders balance it. Like, does it sit right with me? And I think that's like what I call sober behavior. And I really have to measure it against that. Like, I think this part of the step really applies to all of my life. Like, it just doesn't apply to my sobriety, like as in my AA life. I think this really applies to everything. It applies to like my family. It applies to, you know, to how I deal with people. It applies to a person in a shop or on the bus, or, you know, it's everything. And I don't want to make it sound too scary or anything, but I remember a woman sharing one time that she knows how she is, you know, by how she walks down the street. And if she doesn't want to knock people off the pavement, like that, you know, she maybe is okay. Or like, if the days that she does want to knock the people off the pavement, she realizes she isn't so okay. And I heard her share that like way, way back. I never forgot it. Like, I just always have that vision of her walking down the street. Now, she was about 4'10", and I've always had this vision of her walking down the street, like, you know, catapulting people off the pavement. I'm sure she never did that, but in my mind I see her doing that, and she's like my little mentor in my head now for how am I walking down the street. Like, so I see her walking ahead of me, and she's gone now, she's deceased now, that woman. She's great, I loved her to bits, but she walks down the street in front of me if I'm ever trying to do like an inventory on how am I today. But like, that practice these principles in all your affairs, like that's everything, you know. I guess that's, to me, that's all the steps put together. And like, one of, like, you know, they talk about fear. One of my fears is of being a hypocrite. And that's why I want to say that, because I don't want to tell you that, like, I have that one, or that I have all of this, or that I have this stitched up, or that I'm going to be telling you how to do things. I barely have this. Like, you know, I make it up as I go along a lot of the time. And like, you know, I mean, like recently, you know, ironically, I'm doing this chair today on step 12, but like recently, particularly in the last week, I've really struggled, like not with drinking now. I haven't wanted to drink or anything, but just generally in every way, I've like a lot of people have died. I've had a lot happen to me. I was thinking that if I was another person, I'd be looking at me saying, you know, if you felt okay, you'd be in denial right now, you know, because like there's nothing about my life at the moment that, like, you know, you could say, like, of course you're going to feel off at the moment. You're not going to feel right at the moment, the amount of stuff that's going on. And I have a couple of physical things going on and, you know, blah, de blah. So a lot depends. And this is why I said about the date, you know, a lot of the things for me anyway depends on how am I right now? Like, I'm just dealing with blah, blah, and blah. I'm dealing with blah, blah, and also blah. How am I like during all that? And like, I could be like way off, but I have to, you know, and this is why I'm here. Like, I have to stay sober through, you know, whatever it is, whatever events, you know, I'm still wondering what the easier, softer way is because I never found it. I don't even know what that means. I just only know the one way to do this. And they say there's loads of ways to get sober. I don't know what they are. This is the only way I know. But I do know one thing, and I never, ever varied from this one. I know I have to stay sober. Like, I know that whether I want to drink or I don't want to drink or I want to, whatever it is, I can't really, you know, I've never felt I could afford to go back drinking. You know, I never felt that like there was anything back there that was going to be okay. I wasn't going to be awful. I didn't even know the level of awfulness that was there. So it's really a big deal for me to stay sober. Excuse me, I'm beginning to lose my voice. The higher power is telling me I need to shut up for. But it really is a big, like, there's two things that I am ruthless about, my sobriety and my mental health. And they're sort of connected. But it's very, very important for me to mind both of those. And it's really important to me to be quite ruthless about them and unapologetic. And I don't ever have to walk over anybody for my sobriety or my mental health, but I sometimes do have to put myself first. You know, it might be just whatever, you know, I might just have to, like somebody was saying at a meeting this morning, it's put your own oxygen mask on first. Like, that's really important for me. And neither my sobriety nor my mental health is up for grabs for anybody, you know. And also, it's not anyone else's responsibility. Like, nobody else has responsibility for my sobriety and my mental health, only me. Like, it's entirely my gig, you know. I'm not going to blame anybody for it. I'm not going to hold anybody responsible for it. It's really up to me. And like, all of that is me practicing principles and all my affairs. Like, that's all of that is tied up with that. And all of that's dependent on it. And, you know, I just do. Like, you know, I've said this before, it's what I do. This, what I'm doing right this minute, is what I do. It's not that I speak at meetings that much, but it's part of the 12th step. So if I get asked, I do it. Because this is part of how I was trained in my early days to be sober. You know, and as I have to keep emphasizing, being sober does not mean that I get it right all the time. Being sober does not mean I know how to deal with life all the time. Being sober does not mean I feel okay all the time. It just means, you know, I'm sober through all events, or, you know, being able to stay sober. Whatever happens, life has thrown quite a bit at me in sobriety. And the important part about that was that I didn't have to drink over any of it. I have never found anything that drink would have made better. I can promise you that much. I have never found any situation in life that I even had an inkling of a thought that a drink would improve this situation. Those sort of things are really important to me to remember, even if it sounds very simplistic and, you know, okay, really? Yeah, really. I have never found anything. I'm not telling you, if I did find something that a drink would improve, that I wouldn't have done it. But I never did. So these are the things that are really important for me. And these are the reasons I'm here right now. And I don't have any more to share on this except that, because this is just my version of it. Like all the stuff Mark read out, there's loads of stuff. Even the good old 12 and 12, like has quite a good, like if you put lines through the bits, like, you know, the bits that we might want to read that are just a little bit heavy, we can still get some really good gems out of that. And the big book, which I have here, beside me. There's really great stuff in that. And then there's great stuff in the other books as well. And like, I'm open for all of it. I'm open for all the interpretations, but be still taken out of it what suits me, you know. And I will finish on this. I will say that the early members, because I met the early members, I was very, very fortunate to meet the people who started AA in Ireland, because they were old and I was young at the time when I came in. And they were very much into saying, you know, take what you leave the rest. The program, you know, is made to wrap around us. You know, it's like it's supposed to fit everyone, no matter who we are, what we come in believing. The program is supposed to fit us. That's the message I got from the early members, and that's the one that I've always had, and that's the one I continue to have. And I do believe that when people tell you, you know, this is the rigid program, this is the fundamentalist program, that's something that came in afterwards. It's not something that was started by the early members. And I don't care what anyone says about the Oxford group or anywhere we came from. I'm grateful for whatever they gave us. But the early members were not rigid, fundamentalist, you know, rule stomping folks. They were actually really quite generous and broad minded. And basically, they just wanted you to stay sober. Like, they really, really had that thing of just don't take a drink and like get a meeting, or, you know, like it was like, be here tomorrow night, or, you know, give me a call out of your call. Like, because we used to have call boxes back then, stuff like that. You know, that was it. It was very, very simple. And that's the message I got when I came in, and this is the one I still have, and it's all I have to pass on to people is the simplicity, you know, of like, don't take a drink, go to a meeting, just do, you know, whatever it is. Sometimes it's whatever it is gets you through that one day, you know. I call that my bag of tricks, whatever few things I haven't. And sometimes it's just like, just get out of the house. I went out and had ice cream last week because that was all I could do, you know, and it was great. That's it. Listen, cheers, everybody. Thanks.